ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Coming to you live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios from City Center Plaza. Here now are The Killer Bees, Jill Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, hell yeah. You about to get all stung up.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Joe George is back, but he's not with us. He's behind the glass at the studios. We're live at City Center Plaza. Great spot. I mean, there, if you're looking for something to do, you can find something to do here because there is tons of shops, tons of places to eat. Really cool spot. We're out in the elements. One of my favorite things to do is to broadcast with sunglasses on. I'm able to do that today as we're battling the elements.
Live from the center field AstroTurf.
I want to get a wiffle ball game going because I think we could.
If anybody is showing up today, bring the bat and a couple of wiffle balls.
Yeah, please do, because this has dimensions for a wiffle ball park, sort of. But it'd be fun. Andrew Carlson is here, looking great as always. Thanks to Andrew for getting us on the air. We've been ready to go for a long time, and this is a good spot to do all of that from. The Astros won a baseball game yesterday. It got a little hairy. For the Astros yesterday, Ryan Pressly blows a save. Alex Bregman makes an error to start the inning. Ryan Pressly doesn't help out his own cause. He makes an error, senseless going to the plate when you can just get an out with the multi-run lead. And the Nats tie it with three runs in the ninth inning. But the Astros, just like they drew it up, score on what should have been a runner's lane interference call. And the Astros win, take the series, and now go for the sweep today.
I mean, there's so much to unpack here. We start with, I think, what's the most controversial play of the game that you mentioned, that you were on Twitter getting into it with a few folks on, because obviously Astros fans drinking the orange Kool-Aid are hell-bent on. Legal play, totally cool. Umpire was in the wrong position, first and foremost.
I don't know if I'll go that far.
He was supposed to be near the point of the plate.
You can't do that when there's a play at the plate, though.
But he had I think he had to be closer to the plate regardless, and the angle that he had basically took him out of the early stages of that play.
Yeah.
Now, he did recover later, or tried to, and that's when he saw that Jake was more leveled off on the line, which is what everybody else was basing their decision on.
Yeah.
It's a screwed-up rule. It's unfortunate for the Nationals because they've had multiple times dealing with this. But the Astros got away with one last night. They got away with one. They got a win because of it. We don't know if they would have won it in extra innings or not, but the way the rule is drawn up, they got away with one because of the fact that they didn't call runners interference.
Yeah, the umpire, he wasn't in a good spot to call that at all. You're right. Now, it was a little unfortunate for the home plate umpire because he has to stay home. He's got to call the play at the plate before anything else. I didn't think he did a great job of, like, anticipating that could have come into play. Like, he could have cheated up that way a little bit, especially since it's a routine out of the plate. And I think he was late looking. I think he was late looking
up
the line.
There's no doubt. I went back and looked at it, like, three or four times. He took a real casual late look up at the play at first base.
Yeah.
I don't know, and I'm as interested in your thoughts. Should he have moved more to the front of the plate to make the call, or should he have moved more to the back of the plate? Because it didn't look like it was going to be a slide situation. But
yeah,
even still, if you're behind the catcher, you're looking for the bang-bang of, as long as the catcher's foot's on the plate, he doesn't have to make a tag, where he could still be in relatively good position close to the plate.
That's up to the umpire, like what he feels gives him a better vantage point at the runner down the line. Because the most important thing on a runner's lane interference is that you're right down the line.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing. Doesn't matter if you're in front of the plate. Doesn't matter if you're, like, first baseline extended. As long as you have a look right down the line. I thought probably there, since he's making a call at the plate, probably could have crept out to, like, the front of the plate to get a look at it. But he didn't. And look, I don't care. Like, I'm happy that he missed the call. I'm happy that his judgment call went the wrong way because he was out of position. I don't care that the Astros won this way. The Astros have been, you know, they've had a series of bad luck that we'll get to plenty throughout this show. The Astros deserved one. So the Astros get it there. Here was Dave Martinez after the game, though, talking about this, because Dave Martinez lost his lid.
There it is, right there. Take a good look at it. Is that on the line? I don't think so. I'm over this play. Seriously, they need to fix the rule. If this is what the umpires see, that he's running down the line, I'm tired of it. Tired of it. Fix it. We lost the game, and he had nothing to say about it because he can't make the right call. Brutal. Brutal.
So there you go. There's Dave Martinez. He went out there. Dave Martinez, he dropped it at the end of that question. He's like, yeah, I'm tired of this play. Dave Martinez, as soon as I thought of that, I had flashbacks to the 2019 sure. World Series, the Trey Turner play. Yeah. Runner's lane interference was actually called against Trey Turner, which it should have been. Both of these plays should have been runner's lane interference. So Dave Martinez was not screwed in the 2019 World Series. He was a little bit on that play yesterday. I also saw an ejection earlier this year where Dave Martinez got hosed on a runner's lane interference call. I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think that's right. Yeah, so he's been on the wrong end. And you know what's funny about it? You know, it's funny because it's them and not the Astros, is that I bet you that Dave Martinez didn't know the rule in 2019, but I bet you he learned the rule and was educated on the rule since then, and that's why he was so hot yesterday.
No question. I mean, if there's one guy that, just based on personal experiences, knows exactly the ins and outs and idiosyncrasies of that rule and any clauses that go with it, it's him. And they've had too many times to deal with it. It's one of those situations where we see the competition committee and all these professional sports jump on these things as soon as there's one controversial play. There's been one too many already to where MLB needs to get on this, and they need to make an adjustment to it. Because the one,
what would you do to change it?
Well, the clause that was interesting was at the end, they said that if the runner, as he extended to get to the base, would have beaten the throw, or it looked like he would have beaten the throw anyway, then everything else gets thrown out the window. That was really, really close.
I haven't seen that. Like, I was trying, a lot of people were pointing that out, and I was trying to go find that in the rule. I couldn't find that at all.
I was slowing it down because the first baseman extends his glove, and obviously Jake's melon is right there as well, which ends up making contact. But his foot was popping down on the bag right as the glove hit the helmet, whether the ball was there or not.
I don't know if that matters. I don't know if it matters. And if you go look at the close call sports video, they made zero mention of when it happens. Mm-hmm. You would think it would matter, but I can't find anything in the language that it does. And the close call sports, who do a really good job, and they're umpires, they broke it down. So it is a judgment call, but they missed it. Just like a ball and a strike is a judgment call, you miss those all the time. Kind of similar to that play yesterday. To fix it, it's weird to me. I hate this rule. I know this rule because we've talked about it so much, and I used to umpire. But the reason, I don't know what fixes this rule other than having the softball bag. The softball bag is the only thing that would make this easier to understand and would prevent this type of play.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I deal with it enough with my daughter's softball tournaments and such, that you avoid collisions at first base, first and foremost, which is why it's there. But then you also have the ability to kind of clearly define the runner's lane and where the fielder was trying to make the play. I don't know if the solution is the runner's bag and also just kind of leaving it to umpire's discretion more, because it's one thing to say, you can start out on one side or the other, but you've got to level it off and get where you need to be within the last two or three steps. Once you get, it's what, halfway there?
The runner's lane starts at 45 feet. If there's two things that need to happen for it to be runner's lane interference. The first thing that needs to happen is the runner has to be out of the runner's lane until the final step going back to the bag. Jake Meyers is out of the runner's lane the entire time. Maybe he makes the last step to the bag back into the runner's lane, but he was out of the runner's lane for 43 feet.
Yep.
So he was out of the runner's lane. Check. The second thing that needs to happen for it to be runner's lane interference is that the runner has to impact the fielder's ability to make a catch on a catchable ball. That was a catchable ball. It wasn't a great throw. It wasn't a good throw. But it was a catchable throw, and it hit Meyers in the head, so it impacted it. I think that the only way that would fix this is to have the batter runner base. It would look weird. It would look like softball, but you would eliminate this sort of issue, and it would make it a very, very easy call for umpires.
Yeah, it would. And, again, I also go back to the fact that we've seen guys get spiked a lot. We've seen a lot of plays where guys get injured because of collisions at first base. It's going to clear up a lot of that, too. It's aesthetically not a pleasing look, but it also can solve a major problem that, at least for one team, but this isn't the only team that's been dealing with this. We've seen this happen time and time again where you've got to do something to kind of clean it up and more clearly define what you can and cannot do.
Yeah.
And I think that the time is now that if they didn't do it previously, like other leagues, when they do it almost immediately, we've seen college football react, we've seen the NBA react. This is something that they've got to react to now, because you've had too many episodes, and now you have teams losing games because of it. I understand with the Trey Turner in the World Series, Yuli almost lost half of his arm.
Yeah, see, 3-4-0-3, I think the World Series call was wrong.
He
knocked Yuli Gurriel's glove off of his hand.
Yep.
He certainly impacted Yuli's ability to make the catch. Somebody else asking, is it similar to the Grandal play? Not at all. It couldn't be further from the Grindahl play. That's apples, this is oranges. The Grindahl play wasn't at first base. It was a throw to the plate, so that can't be runner's lane interference. Secondly, it couldn't be because Grindahl was yet to get to the 45-foot line. Now, I've been a huge advocate, and people think I'm crazy for thinking this. I think Grindahl was out for just flat-out interference. Interfering with a throw intentionally is interference. He's out. But that was not a runner's lane interference. It's nothing like the Grindahl play.
No, you're right. And I think that, like you said, it's two totally different circumstances and plays. But it's also one that they've tried to clean up the plays at the plate.
Yep.
And they haven't exactly nailed that one either.
It's because, hard, right?
Yeah, it's such a bang-bang play to say, did he have the ball? Did he start blocking it before he got the ball? And again, it gets down to what it always comes down to. It's going to be umpire's discretion.
Yep.
But then you know that whichever team comes out on the short end is going to quote every single phrase and every rule that pertains to it and say they got screwed.
And every umpire's judgment is going to be different too, right? Like some umpires are going to be like, okay, that's he's blocking the play, he's out. Some guys give you the like path of the throw. So like whenever you have discretion, whenever you have judgment, it becomes a little different and it's not always the same from night one to night two. 9953, why not just make that play a reviewable play? I think more plays should be reviewable. I think almost every play should be reviewable. That is not a reviewable play.
No, right now it's not. But let's also think, as much as we think that's the solution, think about what baseball has done this year. Everything that they've done is to speed up the game. And what you're going to do is the more reviewable plays, the more the game slows down, the more the game time is extended, the more Major League hears about it, and then that becomes their major concern.
Yeah.
It should be that they get the call right on the field no matter what. Obviously, we know, at least right in the last 12 months or so, that that's not the focus. The focus is trying to speed up the game and keep the average fan more engaged.
They've done a pretty good job. I agree with you. They've done a pretty good job, though, of speeding up the reviews. And, like, I will sacrifice an extra 5 minutes on average per game if it meant more critical reviews. I would make that trade-off. But the Astros win. Who cares, right? Who cares that the umpire's judgment was wrong? Astros take advantage of it. They're 2-0 in the first nine games of this homestand. Go for the sweep today against the Nationals. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch. At least our pictures are. Twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham, broadcasting live from City Center Plaza. Let's talk about the game. How about Jose Abreu? Is this the moment where Jose Abreu can make himself a fan favorite? Are you out on Ryan Pressly? Framber Valdez back to his usual self. Plenty to get to that didn't have anything to do with that call in the ninth inning. 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I like a good drink at the end of the day. You know that. The vodka, the gin, the bourbon, they're all in the rotation for me. And Gentle Bend does it better than anybody else. How do they do it? Well, their revolutionary Percedo craft technology that eliminates impurities for the cleanest, smoothest spirits that you'll ever taste. Purification of Gentle Bend is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in Gentle Bend. Try a sip of Gentle Bend vodka, gin, straight bourbon, or the cask strength bourbon and compare it to what you drink. You'll never go back. I've been a Gentle Bend man ever since I had that first sip. You get all the flavor with none of the burn. Joe George now, a Gentle Bend man too. He had that first sip last week. He can't go back. It is so smooth. It is so clean. It eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. Look for Gentle Bend at the liquor store on your way home today. Ask for it at your favorite restaurant or bar. Just head to the Gentle Bend tasting room. Or if you're going to the Astros game today, stop by the Gentle Bend bar just to the left of the Crawford boxes right when you walk in the Union Station entrance. Head over to the website, gentlebend.com, and register to win Astro tickets later in July. Gentle Bend, the secret ingredient is what's not in it.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, home of Old Greg.
I know what you're thinking. Here comes Old Greg. He's a scaly manfish. I'm Old Greg!
The 2023 Gold Cup is coming to Houston. Saturday, July 1st, regional powerhouses face off in a doubleheader featuring Canada, Guatemala, Cuba, and the winner of prelims number 7. See the region's biggest stars like Alphonso Davies, Tayshaun Buchanan, and Rubio Rubin. Saturday, July 1st at Shell Energy Stadium, home of the Houston Dynamo. Guatemala versus Canada. Cuba versus the winner of prelims number 7. Get your tickets now at SeatGeek.com. For more info, visit goldcup.org.
Time to hydrate. Grab a Rambler Sparkling Water, the official sparkling water of ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. A Texas mineral blend available in original, lemon lime, grapefruit, and satsuma. Ramblers do it better.
Contact Tax Relief Helpers for details and restrictions. Attention anyone that owes money to the IRS. The IRS has restarted aggressive enforcement actions against taxpayers who owe back taxes that were temporarily suspended for COVID. If you owe $10,000 or more, you must hear this, because now is the time to clear your IRS tax debt. A special toll-free number has been established so you can stop penalty fees, avoid liens, levies, and other hostile measures by the IRS. Call Tax Relief Helpers right now at 800-663-1402. Tax Relief Helpers will provide you with the maximum protection afforded by law.
I got behind on my taxes and owed $48,000. I didn't know what to do. I called and they got my bill lowered to just $3,500.
I owed $87,000 in taxes and it was scary. I got the amount I owed down to just $3,500. I saved $83,500.
If you owe money to the IRS, don't wait another day. Call 800-663-1402 right now before the IRS enforces liens, levies, or other aggressive measures. The call and consult are absolutely free. Call now. Call 800-663-1402. 800-663-1402. 800-663-1402.
With temperatures above average and a 50% chance of rain today, it looks like Houston Powder Coaters is the preferred company to refinish your outdoor furniture. Go to HoustonPowderCoaters.com to find out more about refinishing your outdoor furniture, not the weather. That's HoustonPowderCoaters.com.
The summer circuit rolls on from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, live from City Center Plaza. Here's the Killer Bees, Joe Blank and Jeremy Brenham.
Go, there's a line drive base hit that will score Altuve. Tucker heading to third with a head of steam. He'll be waved around. Kyle Tucker is going to fly home. Two RBI double by Jose Abreu.
Abreu drills one deep to left field. That's on the train tracks.
Jose Abreu, double, a home run, had three hits in that game yesterday. His batting average up to .233. His OPS on the year up to .609, knocking the cover off the baseball in June. He leads all baseball players in all of baseball, because he's a baseball player, in RBIs in the month of June. Jose Abreu leads everybody in the world in Major League Baseball RBIs in June. We told you this was coming. We told you not to give up on Jose Abreu. We told you that he was the man, and as soon as Jordan Alvarez would go down, he would take over as the alpha of the Astros.
I'm just happy that I've held out hope as long as I could, and that he's finally starting to at least reward me for trying to be as loyal as I possibly and maybe more than I possibly thought I could. It's nice to see. The sustainability is what I question. Hopefully this is just a later than usual, late to the party start to a season for him, and now he gets it going, kicks it in gear, keeps it going, and finds another gear as he goes down the stretch, and they get who they thought they were getting when they signed him. It's nice because of Jordan being out. This has the chance to win back all of the people that jumped off the bandwagon or never got on because they were loving Yuli and they also weren't sold on the years and the money. But I felt for the guy. And I said that the other day, that I loved the fact that he was owning the weight of the world on his shoulders, and the fact that he was, you know, playing badly, and he described it differently, but at, you know, kind of admitting that this is on him. Now the fact that he's stepping up when you need somebody, it's great to see.
I think this is a moment where he can try to, like, win the fan base over. Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, the fan base, like, they'll make jokes of Abreu. They make jokes of Bagwell. Everybody wants Abreu to have success. Everybody wants Abreu to be good. Because if Abreu's good, it means the Astros have a better chance of being good. We know to this point of the season that the Astros' pitching has carried them. The offense has not been the best. They're below average in offense in all of Major League Baseball. They're now without one of the best offensive players in all of Major League Baseball, with Jordan Alvarez being shelved for what looks like it's going to be a month, if not more. This is the moment where Jose Abreu can win over the fan base. Like, we even heard Espada talk about it. We heard Cintron talking about it. That over the course of his career, he's somebody who starts off slow, but he has those hot months in the summer. He can put a team on his back. Well, now's the time to do it, because you're without Jordan. It's an offense that has not been good. You need somebody to carry this offense. And if Jose Abreu can sustain this, not even for the whole year, just while Jordan's gone, I think he's going to win over the fan base.
No question about it. And you think about, you know, just what he's been able to do, how he's been able to go about his business. Look, people are looking for a reason to put dirt on him. And there are other people that are hoping there's a way to resurrect this entire move. It's crazy that Espada is the guy that I kept going back to yesterday, going, there's going to be a time very soon when he is going to carry us. He is going to carry us and do the things that we expected him to do. Jordan was healthy at that time. But now at a time when Jordan's out and there is a power outage and you're looking for anybody to step up and be able to do something or anything to drive in some runs and to hit some long balls, he's starting to do those things. So it could be a story that ends up very tumultuous, that ends up with a happy ending if he keeps doing what he's doing right now. So it's fun to see.
Abreu is good. Stressley, not so much. Now, you look at Presley's performance yesterday. The defense didn't help him. One was his own error. Alex Bregman, you get the first out there. You walk away, yep. Top of the ninth. You come out of that, never have to hit. Same thing with Presley. Like, if Presley just fields the ground ball or goes to first base, boom, you're out with one more out. Like, it's not a game. They don't tie it up. So the defense hurt Presley yesterday, but you can't ignore that he also gave up a couple of doubles into the gap in right center field. Where are you at with Ryan Presley? I know a lot of Astros Twitter is ready to have a new closer in the back end of that.
We can't just completely start hanging guys out to dry every time they have a bad performance. I understand that if it becomes the norm or there's reason to worry, which there is a little bit of reason to worry because he's had a couple of shaky outings where he's given up a run here and there and done something like last night. But I don't think you just all of a sudden pull the plug out and pull the rug out from Ryan Presley and say you're not the closer anymore. There was some self-inflicted wounds. He also had some bad breaks. The combination was the perfect storm to let them tie the game. But you got to learn from it. You got to move on. Their defense was terrible. I think he made a really bad decision. I'm sitting there going, why in the world, with a two-run lead, are you throwing home? And I heard someone say, oh, he's trying to save his ERA. No, because the first runner that got on via an
error.
Yeah,
but he doesn't know that in the moment. I tweeted that. He doesn't know in the moment. Yeah, he doesn't know that in the moment.
Yeah, but
he's not sitting there calculating, well, if I get this out at first, then it's not going to affect my ERA. Like, you're right, but Presley's not thinking about that in the moment during the inning.
No, I'm saying, but after reading that, I was like, well, maybe that would have been no, because the fact that there was an error. But I'm going, as a pitcher, you know that as long as you want to keep the lead runner off the bases.
Yeah.
So just go to first, get the easy out. And then deal with the fact that if you do your job the rest of the way, you've got a one-run lead, nobody on base, two outs, and you should be in the right position to win the game. And at the very worst, tie it.
Yeah.
Not be in a situation where it's tied with a guy in scoring position, and you're lucky you got out of it.
I'm not going to go as far to say it was a selfish play. I don't know if Presley was thinking about the ERA in that moment. The coming home was odd. I will say it's a stupid play. It was a stupid play going home in that specific mm-hmm. situation. You get the out at first. You still have the lead. You're an out away from getting the victory. Going to the plate was not a good decision by Ryan Presley. I bet you he doesn't do it again. I'm nowhere near where I've seen a whole lot of Astros Twitter. Oh, well, you know, demote Ryan Presley. You know, make Brian Abreu the close. No.
Abreu hasn't looked great lately either.
He's looked better than Presley, I think.
Well, but there's a difference in that, the fact that you can say that, which I agree with, but you can also agree with me that he hasn't looked great lately either.
He hasn't looked like we know he's capable of looking. Like, he looked all of last year, like he looked last year in the postseason. Presley was great in the playoffs, too, though. The entire bullpen was great in the playoffs. I'm nowhere near demoting Ryan Presley. I'm not even coming close to the idea of demoting Ryan Presley. Also, you can make the argument that the way that they're using Brian Abreu in, like, these fireman situations, coming in with an out in the seventh with runners on the corners, coming into the eighth inning against the middle of the order, you can make the case, even if they're not the last three outs, that they're using Brian Abreu in higher leverage situations than Ryan Presley. So I'm out on the idea of demoting Ryan Presley. I'm out on the idea of, like, let's bang on Presley. Like, he's been a really good closer since he's been the Houston Astros closer. He's blown a couple of saves here. Yesterday was because of lack of defense behind him more than he got shelled. Now, he did give up a couple of doubles. But I'm nowhere near. I'm not even thinking of the idea of making somebody else the Astros closer.
No, I'm not either. And, you know, you do have a bullpen capable of picking up slack, but at the same time, you know, you're putting him out in situations that it's not the pressure. It's not the fact that he hasn't been there and done it in the past. It's just the fact that, just like anything else, in a 162-game schedule, sometimes just a little quirk in your mechanics here or there, or something health-wise that he's not telling the media, or, you know, we're not privy to, but things happen that kind of take you out of your comfort zone of feeling and knowing that you're pitching at your very best. You just kind of, again, weather the storm just like everything else and get through it. There's no reason to start shuffling up the back end of the bullpen. I think he's going to be just fine. And to your point, he's proven that he's gotten through these bumps. Remember when we were talking about, well, is it, you know, his fastball's down? And is it the knee? And is it this? And is it that? And then he worked it out and became the Ryan Presley we all know and love. And I'm sure he'll be able to do that again. This is part of the whole grind of a long Major League Baseball season that you just have to endure and get over and get through.
713-780-ESPN. Are you demoting Ryan Pressly? Is somebody else your closer? Who is your closer if you are demoting Ryan Pressly? 713-780-3776. Also on the other side, we got to talk about Fromber. Fromber was so good yesterday, and he's third, fourth lead story talking about the Stros. It's Killer Bees broadcasting live from City Center Plaza on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now before the break, I'm going to tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. I've been telling you about him for quite a while. I'll tell you about him all day long if you got the time because of the fact that Doc Linville gets results. Doc Linville is the best in the business at the NeoGraft procedure, and if you're losing your hair, you've got pattern baldness, or you flat out just don't have hair where you once did and you want it there again, you need to check out the entire process of the NeoGraft because it can put hair back where you need it, and it'll stay and grow and be with you for the long haul. And the best part about it is it's your hair because he takes hair from places where genetically, you're never going to lose it, the sides in the back of your head, puts it where you need it most. Maybe it's up top in the back. Maybe it's your hairline in the front. And you're going to see the results immediately because you'll see where the follicles are. And then you're going to watch them grow and get stronger and longer and realize it's the best move you ever could make. And as a listener to ESPN 97.5, you get a bonus, and that is you can meet with Doc Linville and his staff to learn more about the procedure and see if it's right for you, and it costs you absolutely nothing. For most people, it costs $150. You get a free consultation, no obligation, no cash out of pocket, nothing that you got to sign that says you're going to actually do something. Just go there and ask questions, get answers, and find out if the process is right for you. It's been right for me. It was the best decision I ever could have made. I see and love the fact that I've got my hairline back in front. You can be the next to reap the benefits as well. Go to 975hair.com and go see my friend Doc Linville.
ESPN 975.com. Get in the race.
There are thrills and terrible dangers ahead.
Killer Bees broadcasting live at City Center Plaza, right in front of, what was you calling this place? Calling it Yardbird? No, it's Yard House. Yeah. Right in front of Jenny's Ice Cream. Great spot. We're out in like this little, what would you call this, turfed lawn?
Courtyard.
I guess, courtyard. We mentioned earlier, if you bring a wiffle ball and some wiffle bats, we'll play some wiffle ball with you. Tony Lone Star, he's in, but he does have a little caveat. He says, I can leave this little event he has. We had to play wiffle ball all the way through the wheelhouse, though, in order for me to cancel the event. I can't speak to the wheelhouse. I don't know if they're going to play with you, Tony Lone Star. AC says he might. But I can't guarantee that they all will. We would, but we do have a radio show to do. So it's going to be like a couple of minutes at a time. So I don't know if it's worth canceling your event. Maybe when your event's over, you can come on out here, hang out. Summer of the Killer Bees. It's the Summer Circuit, City Center Plaza. Come say hello to us. Tomorrow will be at East River 9. So U.S. Open's going on right now. We're going to be there all day from the morning until the evening, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., broadcasting all the way through the evening. Come hang out, meet your favorite personalities like me, and win prizes all summer long on the ESPN 97.5 Summer Circuit. Very much looking to go out there tomorrow. I haven't been out there, so.
That's right. That would be. I was thinking about it. Is that going to be your first time?
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to being out there tomorrow. Alex says DFA Stressly. He also says he's just kidding.
Okay.
Junior Bronco says, let Abreu close. I'm sticking with Ryan Pressly, although a lot of the texters are saying, hey, give Brian Abreu a chance. 6927 advocating for Pressly. A similar thing happened last year to him around this time. He blew a save in New York against the Yankees. I remember that. I think he might have done it twice, that series. Then he went on a run of perfect innings pitch and was great the rest of the year. Pressly will be fine. That's where I'm at with Ryan Pressly.
No, I'm totally with you on that. Look, I don't think his fastball's dipped. I don't think that we're dealing with a knee injury or some of the things he was dealing the last time. But I think that, like I said, these are the trials and tribulations of a major league pitcher, and he's not going to be perfect all the time. Sure, the expectations are there, but you have these bumps in the road, and I think this one is a bump. It's not a speed bump or a pothole, and I think he'll be fine, and he'll figure it out. And if he isn't, you know, in a couple more of these outings, we may be talking about the fact that you see what Dusty might start considering doing like he did when he was moving Montero around for a while, or understanding he had other guys when you don't want to overuse a guy early in the season to finish or, you know, get close to finishing games. But we're not to that point yet, and so everybody needs to just kind of relax, take a deep breath, and, you know, we'll see what happens the next couple times he's out there, but I have confidence in him.
9953, he just wanted to get his first win of the season. Can't blame him for that. It's a good way to look at it.
Except you screw Fromber.
He did screw Fromber. Get to Fromber in a second. One more on Pressly. 2358. If Pressly continues to blow saves, who do you go to?
I mean, to me, it's Abreu based on what we've seen him do last season in the playoffs. But I think you have options. You've got a former closer in Neris that closed for the Phillies for some 89 or 90-some games. So he's done it. You've got guys with the stuff to be able to do it. So I think that you have guys you can go to. It's not like a team that has a desperation mode. Like if the Rangers lost, you know, Will Smith and they needed another closer, I don't know that you look in their bullpen and go, oh, there's a guy or two that could easily do that job. I think that's, again, what the bonus of having the best bullpen in baseball, that you have guys with plus-plus stuff that you could go to.
Yeah, I would go with Abreu. Abreu would be it for me if you're making the move, although we're not making the move. You mentioned Fromber. Fromber had the victory taken right out of his hands. It was frustrating if you own Fromber Valdez in fantasy or daily fantasy, because he should have earned the victory yesterday. It was really good. Hunter Brown was good 2 days ago. Fromber Valdez, good yesterday. This is what you should do to teams that aren't very good. And Fromber looked apart. Look, Fromber got a little shaky in his last outing, you know, fell apart in the middle of that game. Yesterday, Fromber was back to being the Fromber that he has developed into, and encouraging that he pitched well, encouraging, I think, for the next few starts that looks like Fromber has shaken off that one bad outing.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that this is what I wanted to see out of Fromber. The fact that he went deep into the game, that he was in complete control. There was a couple times where he actually pushed the pitch clock to the very, very end, but it was because he was walking behind the mound, doing Fromber things to kind of get his mind right. And I'm fine with that. I mean, he found it. He threw the pitch on time. It was a ball anyway. But at the same time, if that's what he needs to do to kind of right the ship mentally, then do it. Because he's got such great stuff, and he's in complete command when you can tell that he's got confidence on the mound. And that's what you saw last night. And to your point, the other thing that gets something that I'm very pleased about with this team is, unlike years past where you lost series and got hammered in the process, sometimes swept by really bad baseball teams, you've handled your business against the A's twice in a week. You're handling your business against the Nationals. Make sure, no matter what, that you capitalize on the games that you clearly should win. You don't have to sweep every series, but if you're dominant and you get, you know, the majority of the wins, 3 out of 4, 2 out of 3, then you're doing what you're supposed to be doing as a good baseball team, and so I like to see that.
Yeah, it's encouraging to see Fromber. That's what Fromber should look like against the Nets. Like, let's be honest, let's be realistic. It's great to see the bounce back, but you should be pitching 7 innings, giving up 3 runs or fewer against the Nationals. Hunter Brown did it, Fromber did it, and Christian Javier needs to do it. Now, sometimes I don't need Javier to go the 7th inning, and they watch him pretty closely with pitches. Like, if he went 6 innings tonight, struck out 9, and gave up 1 run, I'm cool with that. But pitch yourself deep into the game, give up a couple of runs to a team that's not very good, and you have to be pleased with that. 9229, this isn't to ruffle any feathers, honestly, but in your guys' unbiased opinions, it's all we do here.
That's right.
Unless I'm wearing the Homer hat. Do y'all consider the Rangers an actual contender, and why? Thanks, fellas.
Contender, define it. I don't consider the Rangers a contender to win the World Series. I think that they are a playoff team. I think that they have proven my doubts wrong to this point. I think that whether you expected DeGrom to get hurt or not, the other pitchers, including Eovaldi, who they picked up, and some of the moves they made, like a Will Smith that the Astros were ready to wash their hands of as quick as possible. He did something, found something, is something different than the Astros saw, and he's pitching very well. But they're hitting the baseball. They're a really good offensive team, and the fact is that they are in a really good position with the division the way it sits right now, and they're not showing any signs of, like, run, you know, folding up their tents and going home because they lost one of their guys. They're a playoff team. I just don't see them as a realistic contender to win it all right now. That's not to say that between now and the trade deadline, an owner that's in clear go-for-it mode realizes if he goes out and gets a short-term replacement for a Jacob DeGrom and he does something else, like add a bullpen arm or a closer or does some other things, they can upgrade that status from playoff team to legit contender, in my mind.
That's exactly where I'm at, too. Like, I'm glad that you defined it, because if we define it as a contender for a playoff team or even, like, to win the AL West – Yeah, they absolutely are a contender to do that. Do I take them seriously in the playoffs right now? I think they can do some damage, but I wouldn't call them a World Series contender. I think that there needs to be some work done to that team, namely the bullpen. Like, I think they can get away with the starting rotation that they have because their offense is elite. Their offense is really good. And I remember seeing something a couple weeks ago that Scott Barlow and Aroldis Chapman might be a package deal for teams around Major League Baseball. If the Rangers traded for that, just that package of Scott Barlow or Aroldis Chapman, yeah, the Rangers are contenders to win it all. Like, to me, like, that's their biggest weakness. Their biggest weakness is their bullpen is very mediocre, and that's being kind. That's being very nice to their bullpen. But the bullpen is also the easiest thing to fix of all areas, of all weaknesses at the trade deadline. James Klick did it a few years ago.
Every year, teams are looking to unload bullpen guys because they know they're a dime a dozen, and they can just reload and restock and probably get better contracts that are more friendly for the team. So you can find bullpen arms. I mean, I think the best-case scenario for them is I give them a clear advantage in a short series because I don't think they have a ton of starting pitching depth anymore. But I think when you look at Gray and Uvalde and some of the guys they got, and they got, was it the lefty, is Garcia?
Andrew Heaney, they have Martin Perez too.
Or Perez. You look at it and say, hey, look, I believe in a short series they could be dominant, they could be favored, they could win it. Where they get deeper into the playoffs, I think they have moves to make. But those moves are very easy to make right now, heading with the trade deadline that far in front of you. You can start planning for that. But they're not going anywhere. They're definitely, like you said, contending for the division, and they're going to be in the playoffs in my mind.
Yeah, we have to take them seriously in unbiased opinions. There's no doubt about that. 3780 to the Astros. Can they talk Major League Baseball into letting them play teams with losing records until the playoffs? They'll be in good shape. The Rangers have taken advantage of a lot of bad teams. What the Astros have to do now? You know, 9 games in a row. You got 3 against the Nats. The Reds are playing much better than we would consider the Reds, but they're still, I think, like a game or two below .500. Take care of business against them. And then you have the Mets coming into town, which they've been a huge disappointment, but they have talent. They have dudes, and Justin Verlander is going to pitch on Tuesday. I think it's shaping up to be Javier versus Verlander.
Good one.
Which should be very good.
After Verlander faced Cole last night and what turned out to be a fun game to watch, and it's always fun when the Yankees lose.
How'd that game turn out? I meant to keep tabs of it, and I just didn't.
Kiner Falefa stole home to go
I
up,
did see that on
to
highlights.
Go up 3-1.
But I saw a question being asked. Who was on the mound?
It was your boy, Daly Raley.
It was Daly Raley, right?
Yep.
There was a conversation going on. Did Brooks Raley, when he realized that he was stealing home, did he try to hit the hitter?
It looked like it.
It certainly looked like it. Because it's dead ball, runner returned back to the bag.
Yep. Yeah, it did look that way. But at the same time, and ESPN had a really good angle on a wide shot, that basically Kiner Falefa, I don't think that it was a play on. I think he took he did like a juke and extended his lead. No one looked at him. So he did it again and got further down the line because the third baseman's playing so far off the bag. And at a certain point, he was almost three-quarters of the way down the line. He's like, screw it. I'm going. No one's looking at me. And by the time that Raley tried to, you know, quick pitch, it was too late. He had an unbelievable jump, and it was a really smart play. But then the Mets go with 2 outs. They load the bases. They get into a situation where they tie the game. And then Conforto gets picked off a second base. Or not Conforto. What's the other guy, the center fielder?
Nimmo.
Nimmo gets picked off of second base. I'm going, with 2 outs, what are you doing?
That's bad.
With a chance, with the go-ahead runs on second and third, he gets picked off at second, and then they win it in extra innings, and he was part of it.
So that's one?
Yeah, that's one.
That's too bad for the Yankees. I hate when the Yankees lose.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It was
Yankees lose.
Oh, it hit me in the forehead.
Ow!
It's always good when the Yankees lose. It was neat to see the Verlander-Cole matchup.
That was pretty
night.
Good. So no decisions, I guess. They didn't factor into the decision. Right. 7-5-1-6. If you don't think the Rangers are a title contender, we said that they could be. Yep. They had a couple of bullpen arms. How do you feel about the Astros? The Astros are the champs.
Yeah.
Like, the Astros hold the title. The Astros have a formidable top three if they do nothing at the deadline. The Astros are clutch. They're built for the postseason. They have an unbelievable bullpen. Yeah, they're title contenders. The Astros are contenders. Bottom line is,
until you beat us, come see us. Because, you know, they'll take on all comers. And I like their chances against just about, if not anybody. And they're going to get better. They have a lot of options to get even better than they already are. So, yeah, the Astros definitely are a World Series contender, no question.
Queen Bee's already come to see us here at City Center Plaza, so you got to come out here as well, right in front of Jenny's Ice Cream, right in front of Yard House. I think Blanker's going to stop by at Lululemon before he heads home today.
See Raheel.
Yeah, there you go. Or Kendra Scott. That's where AC
is going to go.
Chewy is
here.
Chewy's here, our guy Chewy. So, yeah, come on out. We'll be here until 7. We'll be here till 3. Wheelhouse will be here until 7. Swing on by. Say hello to us. All right. Houston Texans mandatory minicamp is over. I don't think Stutzer was there yesterday. I didn't see the – he was there. Did he have the Cody Stutz 11 observations? I didn't see him anywhere.
I do not think he had the
He only did it one day. I thought it was mandatory minicamp. And he only did one day? That's terrible for the Cody Stutz 11 observations. But what – are the best things to come from Texans minicamp so far in the last 2 days? Well, really, it's done now. A couple of things. I am sick and tired of people falling into this quarterback controversy trap. It is silly. We'll discuss next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
The Summer Circuit rolls on from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, live from City Center Plaza. Here's the Killer Bees, Joe Blank and Jeremy Brenham.
We're being hooked up out here at City Center Plaza. Chewy came on. Chewy, you didn't bring anything for us. Chewy's out here showing. But you know what Chewy brought? Chewy brought his feelings. Chewy brought his energy. Chewy, we'd mentioned it tomorrow, East River 9, to come see your favorite ESPN personalities. Chewy didn't bring us anything, but Chewy brought his love, and he said, you two are my favorite ESPN 97.5 personalities. Chewy, you said that, right? You did. He's nodding his head yes.
And then Chewy saw all these people bringing us water, showing us love, and he goes, yeah, I was going to bring my laptop so that I could stay longer, but yeah, I'm going to be out of here pretty quick.
That's all right.
Okay, all right, Chew. At least you're honest.
It's hot, man. Like it takes some grinders to be out here for 3 hours. You know, the Wheelhouse is gonna have it easy. The sun's gonna be setting over the yard house, and they're not gonna be in the sun. Like we're battling the elements. We're showing you know how tough we are. We're not soft like certain Astros.
Something happened to the tent so that they might have to deal with the elements later in the day.
That would be a shame.
That would be a tragedy, wouldn't it, Andrew?
Yeah.
Yeah.
David swung on by. We can mention him again later, too. He stopped by and gave us some water.
Listens every day.
Yeah, he listens every day. So you guys are the Killer Bees, aren't you?
Yeah.
What gave it away?
He said, I listen every day, and I knew you guys needed water, and he brought us some big, massive 1 liters of water. We appreciate that. Tecovas Boots stopped by to bring us some Bebs and said, we've got more inside. Come on in. We appreciate them.
Cowboy boots and good times. Do you have a pair of cowboy boots?
Nope.
That's a shame. How long you been in Houston?
Oh, I might. No. Well, when I came to Houston, I vowed that I would never have a hat, belt, buckle, or boots. So
what? Why?
Because I just it's just not my vibe. It's just not my thing.
What is your vibe? How would you define your vibe?
I mean, it's changed a lot since I got married and had
kids. Right now, what's your vibe?
But I mean, casual, comfortable.
Yeah, I mean,
me too. More athletic, you know, more athletic wear than I am worried about jeans. Like, sales guy Q came out here, you know, dressed to the nines with the starched plaid shirt and the jeans and the belt and all that, and then realized when he sweated through the back of his shirt and the jeans were already puddled
that he probably made
a bad call.
You got that going on a little bit, though.
What?
It's the sweat.
Well, I'm sure we all do.
Yeah, I know it's hot. Yeah. It's great, though. Swing on by, hang out with us, City Center Plaza. We'll be here until 3. Wheelhouse will be here until 7 o'clock. All right. Mandatory minicamp. Whenever they say mandatory minicamp, they don't mean for the players. They mean for sports radio stations to talk about them. I'm sad that we didn't get the Cody Stutes 11 observations. I'm mad about that. I'm hearing a lot of dialogue in this city, though, Blankers. Mm-hmm. All over. And one of these takes is going to land on Bad Take Boulevard here coming up at 1:30. But I'm seeing more and more people fall into this quarterback controversy trap. The Houston Texans last year won 3 games. They've won 11 games in the last 3 years. They selected C.J. Stroud over the guy that they traded a King's ransom for. Do not let people fool you into believing that this is a quarterback controversy. C.J. Stroud is QB1 for the Houston Texans. Stop believing anybody that tells you otherwise.
No question about it. We've already kind of hit this previously, that if you want to have the conversation about who is the second-string quarterback, the backup, sure. But if you want to talk about who's going to be the starter, then we're not going to have a Deshaun Watson, Tom Savage conversation all over again. It's already been decided. It's a no-brainer, and it's the right decision to make. So, Davis Mills, I hate to break it to you, as much as you may want to believe that you got a real puncher's chance of getting in there and doing some things to impress some people so that you can be the starter, that might work out for you with another team. Not going to work out for you here. And you're right. It is a lot of fodder for a lot of different media outlets to talk about. But much to do about nothing because C.J. Stroud is your starting quarterback for the Houston Texans.
Do you think it's something to, like, build topics? Like, for real. Like, you know, we build
There's
topics.
No doubt.
But, like, quarterback controversy gives you a segment a day until they name a starter. I don't see how people were foolish enough to fall for this. And, like, you bring up the Deshaun Watson Savage situation. Mm-hmm. The Texans made the playoffs the year before. Like, the Texans were coming off a playoff season. You had a locker room that felt like they were a playoff team. So it's like a different scenario. It's which of these guys gives you the best chance to win football games in week 1. The Texans have DeMeco Ryans, who's going to be here for a very long time. You're coming off 11 wins in 3 years. You're coming off a three-win season. You're not going – like, even if Davis Mills gave you a better chance to win a football game for the first 3 weeks of the season, you are playing the long game. You're not playing what can make you go 1-2 over the first 3 weeks more than the other guy. It's all about the long game. It's about the ceiling. It's about building a window for the Texans. It's not about who gives you the best chance to win in week one.
No, and even still – no one believed it when Bill O'Brien said that Savage was more ready and Savage was the guy and that he deserved to start. And in short order, we saw that we were right, he was wrong. Deshaun stepped in and showed you what he could be and what he was going to be for this franchise, and that was that. And I think that when you look at these things and you ask the question, look, I think when you have to force feed down people's throat on a daily basis, nothing but Texans talk, you run out of things to talk about. It's the reason why we say lazy radio is Mount Rushmore's, and the fact that if you're a flagship, because now it makes your job easier to some degree, but then it's also more challenging because you have to find random-ass dumb topics that you want to beat like a drum because you want something that stays on topic, which is go Texans in June. And so that's what they do. But I just don't see the logic in anybody thinking, well, Davis Mills really worked this offseason. He looks good. This is going to be a season for him to really reinvent himself with this team. No, it's not.
See, I think you can sit there and, like, Davis Mills has a great camp. Davis Mills looks good. That's great.
Backup.
But you can't jump to the QB1 conclusion. Don't fall for that trap. Don't fall into that. And, like, Deshaun Watson Savage, it's the local example that we have. I really don't think it's the best example.
Okay.
I think the best example is, like, Jimmy G, Trey Lance. Like, you draft a quarterback that you use a lot of draft capital for. You draft a Trey Lance, but the 49ers are a playoff-caliber team. So they're going to play in the first week the guy that gives them the best chance to win. The Houston Texans don't have that luxury. The Houston Texans don't have a playoff roster. The Houston Texans aren't going to play the guy that gives them the best chance to win week one 2023. They're going to play the guy that was the number two pick of the NFL draft that has the ceiling, that is supposed to be the franchise quarterback. So don't fall for the trap. That's all I'm going to say. Here's Noah Brown yesterday. He was talking to the media. He says that he sees some Dak Prescott in C.J. Stroud. If C.J. Stroud is Dak Prescott, is that good? Is that bad?
I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, I can see the naysayers right away saying that's not good enough. Go back to the conversations that we've had. It could be a lot worse because we've said and we've highlighted, look, in this conference with these quarterbacks at their age, you can't just be a better than average quarterback. You have to be able to compete with Herbert and Burrow and Mahomes and Allen and literally four of the top five, or maybe all five of the best quarterbacks in football, four of the top five, I would say, if you put Hurts in there, are coming from the same conference. So you have to be prepared if you expect to be better than you once were and go to places you've never been before. You need a quarterback that can do those kind of things. Now, is it possible if you put the right weapons around a Dak Prescott type that he can elevate, but they can elevate the team? Sure. So if you're looking at a guy that a lot of guys scrutinized for you having to take him and the fact that you didn't do what you needed to do to get the number one pick, he could be a flat-out bust according to some people, but if he ends up being Dak Prescott, that's fine with me because you just don't know what you don't know.
I don't think Dak Prescott's good enough. Like,
which is fair.
You're not wrong. Like, if C.J. Stroud is Dak Prescott, that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. Like, you can't think that C.J. Stroud, just because he's your draft pick, just because he was the number two pick of the NFL draft, go look at quarterbacks who've been taken number two for the duration of the NFL history. It's not always great. Most times it's bad, actually. You've had some good number two picks. I think McNabb was the best one, if memory serves. But you've had some Ryan Leafs. Like, you've had more Leafs than you've had McNabbs. So it's not a bad thing if he's Dak. But if he's only Dak, I don't think we're talking about a Super Bowl-level team.
No, that's the kicker, right? Because then you're going to get into what I was talking about. You can be a playoff team. You can win your division. You can be a team that is going to get now national TV, is going to get recognition as a team capable of winning football games. But when it really becomes nut-cutting time and you really get into the playoff situation, when you're facing Mahomes and Allen and Herbert and Burrow, chances are you're not going to be good enough at the quarterback position to win. Now, if your defense is dominant, we've seen that be a factor. Like I said, if you end up getting a weapon or two outside of the quarterback position, that can actually alter and change his game. Maybe he doesn't even have to do anything more. Just make sure you get the ball in that player or those players' hands in the right spots. Mm-hmm. You can take your team's game and elevate it to another level, but is that level Super Bowl level? That's the biggest question.
That's where I'm at. I think that like it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing if he's Dak. I just don't think it's good enough. I think it limits the ceiling of what everybody ultimately wants. Everybody wants their team to aspire to being, you know, a Super Bowl champion, a Super Bowl contender. Stroud's going to, I think, have to elevate over Dak Prescott for the Texans to someday, get into that conversation. Alex is saying, is it regular season Dak or playoff Dak? Which is
fair.
A good point. It's a fair point. 713-780-ESPN. If C.J. Stroud's Dak Prescott, is that enough for the Texans? 713-780-3776. Which year two Texan also has the most pressure on them going into their sophomore year? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.